Visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution is appreciated. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to Technology Bites. Bites.
Greetings, program.
Bites. Do we need to be conflicted?
Bites. No.
Bites.
Welcome to Technology Bites.
Bites.
I'm Jay Lee.
It's not my fault. I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I guess I'm Lee.
I guess he's Groovehouse.
That's right.
All right, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. Barrett is back from Italy.
I've replaced Pete. Assuming that's not him. Yeah, I got back a little after midnight last night via San Francisco, unplanned.
Flicted's in the booth like Lando. It's not my fault!
I was randomly perusing the logs for Bald Heretic.
Yes.
And somebody at Google Googled me.
Google squared you.
Was that you? Very meta.
No.
That's weird.
I wasn't up there
Oh, that wasn't Client X?
Yeah, that was not Client X.
Okay. I hope I didn't spill too
potential
many beans.
Potential Client X. No.
No, but it was just weird because it's like the IP address belongs to Google. They used Google, and Google did its usual thing where it hides the search.
No, if I had had access to stuff like that, I would have added in other search terms just to make some some people panic. That would have been fun. I kind of want to go back now and just sneak onto the campus. Oh, their security is so tight, you can't really even wander around the campus without someone coming up to you and saying, hey, badge. So, you know.
Badge.
Like,
badge.
No, that's not my badge.
There's some guy that was his dream job to become security at Google. He takes it very seriously.
I read something on the plane about one of the Google mapping drivers. I don't know if this has been going around, or I can't even remember where I read it, but it was in Italy.
The guy did a Medium.com post or something?
Maybe. I don't know. I know that he was hired, like he took a job, you know, he went on some interviews without knowing that what it was. So, you know, everyone would just apply thinking, hey, I want to be a Google driver. So it was, you know, just kind of his expose on what it was like to do that and how people try to get in shots and how pretty much everyone wants to be as popular as, you know, their 15-year-old nephew on YouTube. For just 2 minutes, just to, you know, jump in front of the camera. He's had to call police on them and say, hey, you know, these people are following me. It's a little crazy.
I wound up behind a Google mapping car down in Lake City. I took a picture of it the other day.
See, this is the kind of behavior.
Well, I didn't, like, chase it down. It was just, I looked up at a stoplight. Here's my picture.
I did the same thing.
And it was just, like, right in front of me. And I was like, ooh. So that's the noise I made when I was waving. So, yeah, hopefully, eventually, whenever they process this next round.
Blurred out face of Lee. But they're going to leave the lower jaw.
You follow it for like an hour. So it's like, this car is like in everywhere.
I wanted to moon it, but I was the only one in the car. So like, I had people to do like that figure too, it out.
People do all kinds of crazy stuff just knowing that it's going to be, you know, whether in protest or whether they think it's funny or whatever.
A friend
you.
Of mine is on one of the, you know, Google Street Views in front of his mother's house, sitting on the porch.
Is he doing anything?
Nothing good.
Okay.
So we're working on getting Peter Hughes on the show. I'm not sure how that's going or if that's going. Groovehouse has got
Peter Hughes.
Oh!
Now, is that really Peter, or is that just lag from earlier?
from last week's show. All right, so visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out in the IRC, the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bytes. It is the show within a show. Use your own IRC client or use ours. The choice is yours. We have one on our website, which you can activate via your web browser if you care to do that. And if you have a question or something you want to ask us during the show, you can call us or see if we'll, you know, convince Groovehouse to put you on the air, or you can go to geekradio.com and use the contact form and submit your question that way.
The phone software is currently down right now. It's not.
You've got no connection on the monitor.
Yeah.
Well, that settles that. All right.
I'm going home.
Fine.
See ya.
Groovehouse
always threatening to leave. Oh, so you're leaving on Friday,
leaving too.
Yeah.
No threat.
So you didn't even maybe the Geek Gathering, because it's definitely no.
Won't be at the Geek Gathering, and I won't be on the next show.
Party time. Excellent.
Fine.
Be that way.
Yeah, I will.
You're going to lesser New Zealand. All right. So we've got Peter on the show. You know, next month is our 20th anniversary.
Woohoo!
It is.
I don't know that we're going
to... Actually, we passed the 20th anniversary of the first show, whether it was an actual, you know... former radio end of Radiodrome concept or actual, you know, only Technology Bytes, except it was named different.
Radio X.
So,
but for party purposes, you started the show exactly 20 years to the date of the exact minute of the party kickoff. Right?
Boom.
For the purposes of procrastination, I pushed it from June to July.
It's your show. You can do that.
More or less, give or take. You know, it's...
Well, it's also about impossible to schedule something on a weekend in June without hitting something.
Well, this one's going to... Is it the week after the 4th of July? I think it might be.
What?
What are we looking at?
Gathering.
I think the 3rd of July is the first Friday in July, and it's like the federal holiday, because obviously the 4th is on Saturday.
Everybody frantically looking at their calendars.
I think we could probably take the opportunity to schedule it for the Friday after 4th of July.
What? Planning? What?
Oh, right.
Yeah, he is right.
Well, you know, we have in the past pushed it a week before, haven't we? We've done it right on. We did it on the 4th of July last year. Because remember, we all tried to watch the fireworks from behind trees
and buildings?
Well, we could see them if they ever launched them, but it was raining.
That's right. We had poor clouds.
Stupid rain.
So
government-controlled weather.
Chemtrails. The 3rd wouldn't be bad. I don't think that's really a holiday that people say, ooh, let's go out of town for, you know?
No, I don't think
really?
So.
Really? You mean like me? Because I'm sorry, I already have.
Oh, are you going out of town? We could totally reschedule around that. So we'll plan for the July anniversary Geek Gathering thing to be the second week in July.
The 10th.
The 10th. That has a more robust...
It's half the way to our 20th, yeah. It's for, at least we're working in powers of 10.
Yeah.
Okay. We should be using powers of 10.
Kinda. Well,
that's a month away.
Not powers.
The nine-fingered man feels left out. You can't count to 10!
The June Geek Gathering is this Friday.
It's this Friday, yes.
Correct.
The June Geek Gathering and possible automobile-arama.
Ah, yes.
Maybe.
Is this where you and Cone drag race?
Pink slips.
He will lose.
In drag.
Drag race in drag for pink slips.
You were a
and pink slips.
In pink slips.
In pink slips for pink slips.
Loser goes naked.
Ew.
You got the seats recovered, right?
Yes, but hopefully he'll have a towel down.
All right, so let's do this. Let's pretend like we're going to do a Technology Bites show.
It's already the perfect show.
It is the perfect show. Every show is the perfect show. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go out to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Shot with Peter Hughes live from San Antonio via the Skype. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, I guess the biggest story tonight is that we have new bumpers. We have bumpers for all the segments of the show. So it could actually be the perfect show. Assuming Flicted is listening while I do the news and knows that, and is ready to play the bumpers at the right times, or somebody puts a microphone over their laptop and does
then
it.
Then I saw the squirrel and I was like, oh, is it? Is the mic on?
Yes. Nice. Perfect show. Anyways, but the another story, though. Are you sitting down right now? In that case, you should probably stand up before this news story. We've talked about it, but now there are starting to be guidelines. A lot of people in technology, like myself and everybody else on the show, spend a lot of time sitting down at work, and it's become obvious that there are health consequences of that. But now the British Journal of Sports Medicine has come out with guidelines developed by a group of experts that were invited by Public Health England, which is an advocacy group. They recommend that at work, if you're working in tech stuff, or if you're working in a job where you sit most of the time, that you start with 2 hours of standing or light activity each day. And that the target should be that you move up to 4 hours. In recent years, the hazards of sitting too much have been compared to those of smoking, with research suggesting people spend most of their days seated are more likely to be fat, have heart problems, cancer, and even die earlier. Doesn't that make you feel good? Not even regular exercise seems to help. Basically, it's you got to get off your butt or the bad things can happen. According to the guidelines, people who sit most have more than twice the risk of getting diabetes and cardiovascular disease, a 13% increased risk of cancer, and a 17% increased risk of premature death compared to those who sit the least. maybe you need to look into a stand-up desk or, one of the things you can do is make your day less efficient. And I know that sounds weird. But, for instance, turn off your print spooler and then stand up while the job is printing to the printer and while you're going to the printer and all that kind of stuff. Anyways, it's just stay healthy because we only have so many listeners and we want to keep as many of them alive as possible for as long as possible. Yeah, if we're going to do more decades, we've already finished two. If we're going to do more, we need to keep our listeners healthy. In other news, new product announcement. Sounds like Windows 10 is going to be launched on June 29th. Microsoft Operating Systems Vice President Joe Belfiore stated the new operating system would be released on June 29th. Windows 10 will include Cortana, Microsoft's voice control system that's often considered superior to Apple's Siri. It also includes new photos, videos, music, maps, mail, people, and calendar apps. So that's interesting. And Microsoft says it will play nicer with the iPhone with Windows 10. Windows 10 will be available as a free upgrade for Windows 7 and 8 users, although I believe we reported it and then they changed it afterwards. So just to make sure, apparently pirated versions are not going to be getting you the free upgrade. If you have an actual copy, you can upgrade it, but the pirated thing, I don't think that's gonna work. So it is a free upgrade if you have Windows 7 or Windows 8, which could help remove the convoluted pricing structures that have typically come with significant Windows upgrades. Microsoft has not said when the Windows 10 compatibility updates for its iPhone apps will be available, but it seems likely that they'll get to the App Store on Apple by July 29th. So there's something for everybody to look forward to in the summer after the Geek Gathering or after the 20th anniversary party when they, you know, come crashing back down to Earth. Oh, and speaking of crashing down to Earth, you know, when you fly and they make you strip down and they put you through a, you know, they I don't know, X-ray scan your whole body and all that kind of stuff so that you can feel safe. You know, some people call it security theater. So I guess if they're looking through your clothes, is that security porno? Well, Transportation Security Administration screeners allowed banned weapons and mock explosives through airport security checkpoints 95% of the time, according to the agency's own undercover testing. Ouch. ABC News reported the results on Monday, found this article in Ars Technica, and they could not independently confirm them. According to ABC News, a Homeland Security Inspector General report showed that agents failed to detect weapons and explosives in 67 out of 70 undercover operations. Not good. The Homeland Security Secretary, Jay Johnson, was apparently so frustrated by the findings, he sought a detailed briefing about them last week at TSA headquarters in Arlington, Virginia, according to sources. U.S. officials insisted changes have already been made at airports to address vulnerabilities identified by the latest tests. It's been, you know, and then that comes on other sort of anti-terrorism stuff. You know, for a while, parts of the USA Patriot Act expired, including the bulk telephone metadata program that Edward Snowden disclosed. And I believe they've worked through some kind of deal to have another version of it. But so not a great week in the national security front. On the plus side, I don't think there were any big hacks revealed. So there's that. So you can feel comforted in that as you take off your shoes and figure that and figure that you're safe. Oh, meanwhile, in the airport screening undercover operation, ABC News said the alarm rang when an undercover agent set off a magnetometer, but during the follow-up pat-down, a fake explosive device fastened to his body was not discovered. Isn't that fun? So, and then I guess on the surveillance front, apparently the FBI is using front companies to register airplanes to fly them over cities to run to run surveillance from civilian planes that people don't know. That was another big story this week. So that is the news.
Flicked had to stop what he was doing and pay attention to the show for a minute.
Whoa, hey. Yeah, I don't know if you guys
that trick never works.
He was busy registering shell companies.
What happened to Lee?
The NSA, it's totally cool.
Hey, just a second. What did happen to Lee?
Did he get a phone call?
Turn around a little while, and I come back and he's
some black man grabbed him off the street. I thought maybe that was planned. That was his ride.
It's probably an emergency at Ars Technica.
He's gone off to be with his real show. No,
I'm taking a call from Leo
Laporte. Yeah, he's talking to Dwight.
Please come back, man. I gotta be kicked off the show. I don't want to quit, but no. Anyways,
all right.
So, you know, as you may have heard in the news, we've got new bumpers. So
yeah,
I don't know if I can play. I mean, I'm sure I can play those through my computer, but I think normally I turn off the normal sound output of my computer so that, you know, when my computer makes
weird
noises.
Oh, so wouldn't play it if you did do it. Okay, well,
I can change it, but then, you know, if I get a message on directed to me on IRC or something. Like, yeah, it's going to start making other noises.
All you have to do is just keep a straight face, and everybody will just think that their phone went off at their at their house. They'll all be looking around, and just like in the movies, whenever they play the Nokia ringtone sound in a movie, did you ever watch and see all the people who like pat their pocket?
Well, I get that when I
they released Lee.
When I watch Elementary, they have all the text messages and notifications are default Apple iPhone noises, and it's very distressing sometimes.
I'm impervious to that.
Yes,
me too.
You're impervious to having a working phone, so.
I don't
it's
use,
like
I don't
if,
use
if
the
any phone
sound.
Is making a noise, it's probably not yours
it's
because
not
it's
mine.
Like.
So, how did you work your tech for your international travel, Barrett?
I got an Italian SIM card the second I got on the ground, which they didn't want to give me a real phone number. Apparently, they've tightened down on that a little bit, so all I could get was data.
I had trouble with that in Germany too.
Yeah, I think that's I don't know. I saw a lot of machine guns on the ground in Italy, like more the amount that I normally see in Brazil.
When did that change? Do you think?
I think that there were some and. I may be speaking out of turn, but from my understanding of Italian, which is very tenuous at best, I think there were some ISIL and ISIS threats. So there was a new what was called like a street security program, which took like whatever the Italian European version of the Hummer is and put dudes with machine guns. And now I think the Italian, I've got a lot more respect for the Italian military because I think all those guys and gals are really really tough because they've got pom poms on their hats. And to have a pom pom on your hat, you've got to be able to back that up.
Right. Well, wait a minute. Were these the special police in the gay district of Rome?
No. That was a whole other story, too. Yeah, Airbnb and, services like that are great. But the last place we stayed, and I stayed with one other guy that I went to school with, and he works out a lot. And
he's very handsome.
They had pom-poms on their shoes.
Yeah, different placement of the pom-poms on there. And we got a lot of, hey, guys, and a lot of, just like treatment, like coupley kind of treatment. I didn't really understand why. And then we Googled. He's the one that brought it up, and it turns out there is, like the Montrose is, kind of known to be very, LGBT, what have you, friendly. We were on – so if you Google gay Rome, the street we stayed on comes up. We were in the epicenter of it. And all the bars we went to, were very much in that, declination. And
it just means you can get a lot of free drinks.
I stood outside waiting for his cab to come by one afternoon and got so much attention. I'm like, okay, I've got to go back in. So I was out there, you can take beers on the street. Everyone kind of did. And and then Saturday night came around. We came out. And there
you
were,
came out.
There was a drag queen something going on, and just DJs and the Rainbow Flags. Well, so there's a lot more obvious that
they all
night.
Know the how fiery the redheads are.
Well, it's good that he told me, because otherwise I would have thought all of Rome was just like that. That's all of Rome.
It's just amazingly friendly.
Wow.
Everybody thinks I'm so handsome.
I mean, I got emergency
that
marching orders to
win you some friends.
Yeah, to leave Rome. So instead of going out that night, I had to go home and pack and beat it back to the West Coast.
Womp,
and they brought all the rain with me. Yeah, we got stuck in New Jersey for quite a while. I guess there's rain just everywhere.
Except down in League City where I am.
Oh, so
really?
You missed that
enough.
In Houston.
Yeah, that's even the you missed all the flooding, all the pictures, all
like,
that coming up.
2-3 exits north of me, like at El Dorado and I-45, like underwater, like marooned cars. 2 exits south where I am, nothing. We got.
They need to make.
So I think Lee's suspicious now. He was in cahoots. Why did it just miss his area?
Yeah.
Aww, rain machine.
Well, now that we know that there's a dry area to be a repository for the excess water, we need to come up with these industrial squeegees that we can just shove the floor.
Everybody, come on. Yeah, send that water down to my house. Sure, why
don't
not?
Take it.
No.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure the smug will wear off whenever a hurricane comes up your way.
It's been a few years, and I would really rather. Knocking on wood, would really rather not go through that again.
No, I don't want to do that again. That
from an IT, business continuity disaster recovery perspective, that's kind of scary that we're having this kind of weather when we're not even fully into hurricane season yet.
Well, I know Eric Berger, who's the Kron Sci guy, has said that he's been reading this was probably going to be a quiet hurricane season.
Ooh.
which is good. I will take continuing quiet hurricane season.
Well, but the thing about a hurricane
when
is
they
really
say that they.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Jinx. You go, Pete.
Okay. They say that when they talk about that stuff, they're talking about the Atlantic hurricane season. Meanwhile, on the Pacific side,
who cares?
They've had two. Yeah. Just wait. They've had two Category 4s in a row for the first storms of it breaks the record for having Category 4 storms that was set last year. And one of them may, like, soak the Southwest. I don't think it would get to us.
Let's say, doesn't California need a lot of rain?
They did.
Yes. Yeah, it really does.
I think it's going to go like, of course, it's going to go like, it's going to hit like Baja California. And then,
well, plus, this it's one of those deals
up
where
and
like,
over, it won't go through California.
Like, yeah, they need like a lot of rain, but they don't need it all at once. You know, that's not going to help.
They don't want to fill all the lakes up like we did in a weekend.
They don't need all 300 inches of rain like in 24 hours.
The thing about a hurricane, though, is that you can watch it approach and you can prepare for it and you can will it to Louisiana.
Or at least to Humble.
I would say if they could just get one really, really good earthquake, Japan, Hawaii, somewhere around in there, California would probably get a lot of water.
It would just it would slide off north.
It's a little salty.
It might be salty, but yeah.
Hey, salted almonds from California.
All right. So what do we have up next on the Technology Bytes program of wonder?
Does somebody have a mic near their laptop that can play the bumper?
Let me try this.
So professional.
Bite of the apple.
Man, that's so ominous.
It's horror. I figured that'd be fun. And here's a and it's a good ominous one for this time. Apparently, Macs older than a year are vulnerable to exploits that remotely overwrite the firmware
this
that boots up the machine.
Pretty scary.
Yeah, big deal.
Yeah, a feat that allows attackers to control vulnerable devices from the very first instruction. Basically, you cannot, you know, you can't unless you, I wonder if you knew it's there, couldn't you? You could put in new firmware. And then that would fix it. But if you just wipe your hard drive and then reinstall the operating system completely from scratch, that still won't get rid of the exploit.
Does this? I thought when I was reading this, I thought this still requires physical access. Does this not require physical access? Is this a remote exploit? I'm looking at the article right now to see.
The main. Well, what it says is they don't, I guess in the article I'm looking at it, they don't make it clear, but
they didn't really provide a level of detail, but it sounded like as long as they could find a remote exploit,
including Safari.
So if they could do it through a browser, they could exploit the browser to upload the file and then execute it to get it into the firmware memory.
Yep. So what happens is apparently, and they don't know totally how it's doing it, but essentially when the Mac restarts from sleep, there's a protection called flockdn allows userland apps read-only access to the BIOS region. For reasons that they can't figure out, that protection is deactivated after a Mac wakes from sleep mode, which leaves the firmware open to apps that rewrite the BIOS, a process typically known as reflashing.
Gives not just apps, but gives userland apps without root privilege.
Right. Everything. So from there, attackers can modify the machine's extensible firmware interface. You might know that as EFI, the firmware responsible for starting a Mac's system management mode and enabling other low-level functions even before loading the OS.
So Barrett, are you going to take your old MacBook Air there to DEF CON and do a hands-on hands-on with this exploit?
This may become the new beater. So we'll see. The new burner, rather. Both. Yeah, I'm due for a new Air.
Apparently, though, if it's a newer one, if it's less than a year old, so everybody rush out and replace your inexpensive Apple Harp Noah. So it's not clear what's being done. Macs released since mid to late 2014 appear to be immune to the attacks. Let's see who's said it. This researcher said that where was it? Now I lost my place. Said Macs released since mid to late 2014 appear to be immune. It wasn't clear if Apple silently patched the vulnerability on newer machines or if it was fixed accidentally. Does that make you feel comfortable? I don't know. Maybe it just accidentally. Yeah, we ran some updates. We installed it on top of itself, and then the problem went away.
Exciting.
Obviously, Apple has not commented and won't until a fix has been released. There's really nothing much you can do to prevent exploits other than to change your settings that changes the settings that put your machine to sleep. So you can just leave it awake all the time. So we'll keep an eye on that one. This isn't something likely to be exploited on a mass scale. It's also apparently not hard for people with above average skill to carry out. So don't feel like just because you have a Mac that you're invulnerable, because you certainly are vulnerable.
No, those will bite the apple.
Those days are long gone.
There was a talk last year at DEF CON by Michael Osman, and he was going through, like, and again, the stuff he was talking about was from 2008, but he was running through the NSA toolkit, and a lot of the buzzwords you saw when you were looking at, like, I guess they're technically declassified now, the slides were persistence and BIOS. So even you reflash the BIOS, do everything you can. What a lot of these are trying to do is they write to protected areas of the BIOS, which normally won't get updated during a flash. So a lot of times, once this is on here, it's on there, and I'm not sure if they know enough about the one on OS X to know if that's the case, but I bet the really persistent stuff isn't too far behind it.
Well, Macs use EFI, so it's even more stupidly complicated. Yeah, EFI is one of those things that there's a very small number of people that really understand totally how it works. It is just, it's absurdly complicated, unfortunately. So if you've got a persistent BIOS virus, is this kind of the kind of thing where you can like fix it by pulling the recovery jumper? Or is this like drop the computer into the crucible?
I think it depends. I mean, just from what I know about messing around with physical computing, there are some parts of the registers that you go to configure the chip that you can write one or two or three times. But once you flip those, they're kind of flipped. And to redo it, you've got to get a new chip. So
currently it says
you have soldered chips and have to re-switch everything.
Yeah, currently it says you have to find a hobbit and some companions to take the Apple machine to Mount Doom. And other news, I guess also not happy news. WWDC is coming up.
Next week.
I looked at the what to expect at WWDC, and nothing like wow, earth shattering talk about it is likely. That you haven't already heard. There's nothing like that coming, but one thing that is not coming for certain is a redesigned Apple TV set-top box. Apparently, Apple has postponed its plans because the product is, quote, not ready for prime time. There's been announcements about what's going to be on Apple TV and on the new one. They're talking about it's going to do a lot more with HomeKit, so that it will, and the rumors are that there'll be kind of Siri-like function or Siri functions on it, where you could control Apple HomeKit, home automation stuff through it. So in a way, I guess sort of like that speaker thing from Amazon, but without the new hardware and some of that kind of stuff, it's still just regular Apple TV. That was according Recode is also reporting that it's essentially kind of spread all over, and so it sounds like it's a pretty solid rumor that it's not going to happen. And then finally, this one is actually there. Here's your cool one, and this is it's Apple centric right now, but it certainly speaks to what can happen for everybody else. The Thunderbolt 3 specification has been announced by Intel. And with USB-C, people had thought, there's that new MacBook that has the single port that's USB-C. People had thought that might be sort of the death of Thunderbird. But instead, with this new specification, it replaces the legacy mini DisplayPort connector for the new smaller reversible USB-C standard and offers transfer speeds up to 40 gigabits per second with high-end cables. Thunderbolt 3 will be a superset for USB 3.1, which runs at 10 gigabits per second, or gigabytes per second, sorry, using a standard USB-C cable. Thunderbolt 3 will offer transfer speeds of twice that with the standard cable, and four times if you have high-end cables. Hopefully they didn't give the 40 gigabit per second cable franchise to Monster, where it's single atom oxygen blah, 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 thousands of dollars for
no,
a piece
they're,
of wire.
They're going to be I was actually reading about this. They're going to be passive cables, active cables, and then there's also the potential for sort of the resurgence of Intel's light peak technology. There may be an optical option for cables here, which would be super high bandwidth or even more importantly, high bandwidth long distance, which the passive and active cable, or the, yeah, both the passive and the active cables don't get. So it'll be interesting. I like the form factor, the USB type C. I mean, I like the one port to rule them all, which is kind of what this is becoming. And plus, of course, the obvious humongous benefit of USB type C is that it is a reversible plug. So as opposed to regular
still
USB,
won't go in the first time though.
Standard USB has three orientations: incorrect, and then incorrect, and then correct. Whereas USB type C plugs in any orientation, any flat, or you can't plug it in like 90 degrees. That would not work.
So it's a coin flip. Well, the cabling will also simultaneously support DisplayPort 1.2, third generation PCI Express, and power supply for recharging notebooks at up to 100 watts. So that's pretty good. The standard will also allow for Thunderbolt 3 to enable dual 4K monitor support simultaneously with 10 gigabit Ethernet networking, which, I mean, is like fine for your laptop on the road, but, you know, we'll need some real stuff for at home. computers supporting the Thunderbolt 3 spec are expected to hit the markets later this year. It's likely that it will require Intel's next generation Skylake processors, it doesn't even have to be a rumor. You know, the odds are just for everybody out there, if you're Apple focused, is that the USB-C connector is going to spread to more and more devices at Apple, as far as for everything.
Yeah,
I wonder if it'll get to the phone, but
it's possible. Although, I mean, at that point, long-time iPhone customers will be rather upset because they will have gone through three cable changes from 30-pin to Lightning to now to this. We're going to hear more about. I mean, you mentioned Skylake. We're going to hear more about Skylake and. August, because Intel's developer forum is happening in August, and we're expecting tremendous amounts of Skylake info dumps to hit right about then, and then you'll see it filter out into consumer electronics shortly after that. Apple, particularly, I would imagine, is going to be keen to adopt Skylake, considering how just burned they've been with Broadwell. Because they got that one pretty hard.
Yeah, on the Daylight and Dollar Short desk, Broadwell, they just announced this week that they have the Broadwell chips that could work for the Apple 15-inch, for the MacBook Pro Retina type machines.
It's really a shame.
Those are now available.
Yeah.
Finally now available. And that was supposed to be last fall.
Well, Intel usually, I mean, you can almost set your clock by them, but the Broadwell low voltage cycle, they've just been really, really bad on. They've just missed it. I mean, you know, really bad on. Like, I sit here in my comfy chair like I know anything about processor gate design. But, I mean, you know, it's usually they're really on time, and they just haven't been this time around.
I guess it's a big slip for them, and it's a surprise because they don't usually they're within kind of the margin of error that most people would find acceptable.
Yes.
So it should be, so it'll be exciting to see the USB-C thing is finally, I mean, we really have finally gotten, this is the last step where as that connector becomes more common, power, video, and data using the same cables from device to device is finally kind of possibly here.
Yeah, it's
finally
here. And it's not just, I mean, not just any data. It's your, or I guess rather it is any data. It's networking, it's video, it's low bandwidth peripherals, it's high bandwidth peripherals. It's everything over one cable. So it's a big deal. And power. So, you can carry power on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it opens the door for, it opens the door for easier 4K, implementation, which computers are the place where 4K is going to make the most difference in the, sooner because it makes more sense. You know, the more pixels in the clearer picture are going to be more useful for people sitting at their desk than they are sitting on your couch. To be quite honest.
We'll see.
Yeah, so that's all I got under Bite of the Apple. What's the thought on the bumper? Other than, is it too dark?
It's a little dark.
Good for Halloween.
Save it for the Halloween show.
Oh, now we got to do a special, like a Halloween special. We can do that. I guess I'll start thinking about that one. I just figured, you know, since Apple, usually everything is kind of all sunshine and light, that I'd go for the like horror style for that one. But
it's so scary.
I'll see if I can come up with something else.
I'm scared. I'm scared sitting here.
So was there anything, so Mr. Barrett, you know, you're back. So, was there anything big surprising that you saw technology wise, as far as normal everyday use of stuff in Italia
Italy needs bandwidth. most of the bandwidth there is mobile, or at least the place, I guess I was kind of in outlying places, but, they don't wire stuff. I think a lot of it just speaks to the age of the architecture. So instead of doing, you know, physical installs and, you know, running cabling and, you know, fiber to the doorstep and, you know, or even, you know, twisted pair to the doorstep would be nice. They issue, wireless routers that are supposed to get up to about 26 megs, per second is kind of what the standard looks to be, but you've got to have very clear sky. And given that most places in the old Italian cities have high walls that are on hilltops, nothing really plays out. So I was doing really good just to get like ISDN speeds down and maybe, you know, a fraction of that up for the most part. So you go to secure shell into something and what should take like 2 or 3 minutes takes 15 to 20. I mean, you can see the keystrokes queue up.
It's like being on a shell account back in the old days.
Yeah, only dial-up was faster than that for some reason. It's like handshakes took forever. But aside from that, it was pretty cool. I used a lot of Bluetooth technology this time around. I used Italian SIM cards, prepaid kind of stuff. So all in all, you know, stayed fairly well connected.
Apparently all their technology efforts go into making better and better cappuccino machines.
I did see a lot of those.
How was the cappuccino in Italy?
That one thing I learned, I kind of knew this before, is you don't order cappuccino after 9 or 10 a.m. because it's seen as a, you know, that's for kids and for breakfasts. Huh. Men don't drink cappuccino, at least Italian. Yeah.
What do men drink? Just sip your espresso all day long?
They did in the neighborhood where you were staying.
Yeah, exactly. There at the end, it was that we may have been in cappuccino land. I used some Cine. I used a lot of Bluetooth gear on the motorcycles. And then also we had rigs that actually let us power electronics from the motorcycles, which was pretty nice, in the top bags. So we were able to, you know, through Bluetooth. And it was, I don't know what spec it was, but when I think of Bluetooth, I think maybe, you know, 10, 15 feet. But we were running 900 feet, you know, 1,000 feet between Bluetooth headsets. Which you could listen to radio, stream music through the phones, and everything like that. So it was kind of my first foray into that. The hard part with that is, I guess, you've got gloved hands, and you've got like a little dial on the side of your helmet and a button. So going through the menus on that is very tough. Although they did have voice commands, but again, I didn't outfit any of the gear until I got on the ground, which was a mistake.
Did you have to do the voice commands with an Italian accent?
No, luckily.
Wave your hand around?
These were American kits, but I did have an Italian GPS, which was nice. And also the big thing there is they don't necessarily, so they've had to have an Autostrada, which is, you know, if you've heard of the Autobahn in Germany, similar.
But with no rules.
Well, they have automatic speed cameras, which will track your speed. And then if you're going past a certain speed, they'll take a picture. And then apparently you get mailed a ticket later on.
Can they find you in America?
Oh, yeah. So what will happen is if you're American, what will happen is if you rent a car, they will bill the car company. And then the car company will pass it along to you with a hefty surcharge for having to go through all the trouble of doing that. So the credit card you reserved the car with, you know, suddenly gets, you know, $600 in charges or even more, depending on how many you ran. But, we talked to other people, and in Sweden it's even worse. One of the guys for one ticket got, I think it was like a €2,000 ticket for one speed camera somewhere in Sweden.
Don't speed in Sweden.
The nice thing is, the GPS I had would tell me, it'd say like, hey, you know, velocity camera coming up, and these sirens would go off in the helmet, and we would, you know, cut our speed appropriately or just check our speed. And I think we dodged everything like that. And the GPS it would ask you, like, is this speed camera still here? You could add new ones. So it's kind of a community effort to subvert all of the Italian Autostrada, you know, speed cameras.
It's like using Waze.
I was going to say, Waze.
Yeah, and this was a Waze. Not to drop names, this was built into TomTom, and I don't think they could get away with that here in the U.S., but over there it's fine.
Well, I know in Sweden the reason for the expensive tickets is they make the fines for speeding proportional to your income.
Yes, I've heard about that.
Here in America, we make it so that billionaires can just pay their fines because it's like pocket change, where there they make sure that you feel it.
Did we do a news story on that, or did I read that while abroad?
I've read it too, but I don't think we've talked about it.
Yeah, there was someone got like a $67,000 ticket because he was, a PM and earned quite a bit of money and all this stuff. And it was like a certain percentage of your money, maybe a month or two of income, something along those lines. And yeah, it was five digits.
Ouch.
Yeah, I'd vote for that. Of course, we would need the exemption for us normal people, but wouldn't you like to see the rich dude, we could call it the douche fine, which is when your car is worth more than a certain amount and you make more than a certain amount and you get a, 100 mile an hour speed ticket that you have to pay something that your friends, when they hear it, go, ow.
Now, as far as their view towards, the one thing I did notice was their view on, I guess, punishing people for traffic, or I guess traffic missteps, is that they put the punishment instead of prevention like Sweden does with ticketing people for speeding. They kind of go easy on you and they don't enforce too heavily when you're just driving normally. But if you mess up and get an accident, that's when the hammer comes down. So they let you drive however you want to, but you'd better not get an accident. So as a result, people will, kind of show each other up, but everyone backs down right before the critical moment. So it's just a different style of thinking about things, I guess.
When I was driving in Ireland, the GPS had little alarms that went off when you got near speed cameras.
So it was kind of... I was not aware that there were any in Ireland. Uh oh.
Did the alarms sound like the like the sirens?
No, but if you were going, it would alert you that one was coming up, and also if you were traveling over speed
too fast. Yeah, that's nice.
It would blink red to match the blinking camera shutter.
Long ago when I went to the UK, that it was interesting how many speed cameras there were around, especially like in towns and where they used them. And they're very camera happy there. And then I didn't drive when I was in the UK, so it didn't matter. The taxi driver had to worry about it.
And there's always the joy of trying to pair a Bluetooth phone or a Bluetooth device with like a car audio system when the language is fairly foreign. It's kind of guess.
It's like someone set this to start the wrong language. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, and then the person who gets it after you, because if you successfully turn it to your language, then the next guy, in Italy. I couldn't think of a good thing to say. I don't know enough Italian to come up with a good...
I only know how to say swear words in Italian. And
that's a spicy meatball.
No, that's not
a phone call to the FCC.
Pretty much, yes. In Germany, we sped all the time. Of course, it wasn't speeding. We sped on the unlimited sections. That was the... One of the weirdest things is the cab ride I took to the airport at the very end from my hotel to Munich International was we hopped on the cab driver in his shiny BMW cab, hopped on the Autobahn, and there were several unlimited sections. So he's going, 120 miles an hour in this nice BMW cab on the Autobahn and watching the fare meter just go, because it goes fast when you're going that fast. That ended up being like a 60-euro cab ride. It was a lot. But it was fun.
Well, my memories of riding in a cab in Rome was that our cab driver was very, very aggressive. And we thought, this is kind of crazy. And then we had a confrontation with a van full of nuns who tried to cut us off. And it really almost came close. What felt like an accident, like we were going to just...
You don't want to scuffle with the nuns either.
No. Oh, I thought you almost got into a fist fight with the nuns. That's what I was hoping.
You might.
Had we collided and had to, exchange information or something, it was not going to go well.
Awesome.
So
all right.
Back into the one other thing I learned on the trip. So is there a reboot or a single episode of Doctor Who before we got the new...
I don't watch. I'm not caught up.
No, this is before. This is apparently the Rowan Atkinson. I can't tell if this was like a hoax or if this was like a funny thing or what. But it looks like Rowan Atkinson played in one season that linked the old stuff up to the reboot.
Well, there's this website called Wikipedia.
Yeah, we should look at that.
Tell you.
So,
everybody, Wikipedia. Rowan Atkinson.
It's just odd that this would be off our radar here in the U.S.
Rowan Atkinson in a season of Doctor Who?
No, I think maybe just an episode or two. Maybe just one episode.
Doctor Who special starring Rowan Atkinson. Doctor Who, The Curse of the Fatal Death.
So is this...
Doctor Who charity spoof. Okay,
so it's for charity. There we go.
Yes, it was a Doctor Who special made for the Red Nose Day charity telethon in the UK. Originally broadcast in four parts on BBC One on 12 March 1999 under the title Doctor Who and the Curse of Fatal Death.
But BBC One did it, so they were kind of in cahoots with it. So it could be considered part of the official canon if one looked at it in the right light.
I think the Red Nose, it seems like Red Nose Day and then like the Christmas special only has to have a very vague relationship to canon in the Doctor Who stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we haven't talked about Mr. Robot yet, have we?
No, we have not.
Can we?
We can.
Jay's the one that turned me on to it. I saw this from abroad.
Well, Chris Goggins of Legion of Doom turned me on to it. So he, you know, just a hacker suggested, he said, watch this now. And that's right.
There we go.
Yeah!
Full round approval.
So there is a new USA, I want to always want to say USA Today.
Up no. All night.
Night flight.
A new USA channel procedural, a drama, a crime drama, a weird drama. It's called Mr. Robot. And it follows, they've released the first episode, the pilot episode for free. You can download it. You can watch it on YouTube, Mr. Robot. You can find it on the Amazon Fire Stick. If you search, I don't know where else, but it's everywhere. You can find it.
And like
you can
legally.
Watch it. Legally,
yeah.
You can legally watch it. You don't have to.
You don't have to be a hacker to watch this.
No. And it follows, the storyline is about a young guy, probably 20-something, who's got a personality disorder, kind of like maybe, it's not Asperger's, it's not autism, it's... But it's
social anxiety. He doesn't like to be in crowds. He doesn't like to be touched.
Yeah, he's not socially...
He has a voice modulation problem.
He's not socially... he's not socialized. He's not well socialized. So he works in a security company managing firewalls for big corporations.
Which he doesn't like. He doesn't like the big corporations.
No, he doesn't like that. And he's a hacker, and he's very computer savvy, and... He can't interact with people one-to-one very easily, so he tends to do all of his research by finding them online, looking at, you know, their Facebooks, looking at their social media, taking what they like, and then building brute force password hacks and hacking their email based on...
So let me ask you, so without too much more plot giving away, just the technical aspects of it. Like, I would be hard-pressed to name a hacker movie, much less a hacker. You know, we say hacker. Like, let's just say computer-based. Like, anything that portrayed with any kind of, you know, veracity or any kind of, like, actual believability, anything computer-based, aside from maybe, like, the Rainbow Books and the movie Hackers from forever ago. And then the next second believable thing would be, like, Penn Jillette being in the movie. So, I mean, there's not much, you know, there's not much out there that's really been good. Maybe Sneakers 15 or 20 years ago?
Even this guy in the show, the protagonist does not necessarily the way they portray him. They don't necessarily focus on his obviously very good computer skills, but it's also his social engineering skills that he uses. Mm-hmm. It talks about reality of how much information people disclose online or how noticeably absent their online presence might be, which leads to suspicion, causes him to want to investigate him further. But his ability to interact with people is totally through the computer and online and through hacking and so forth.
There are people that are really like that. I mean, that's what I think struck a nerve. It's like I recognize certain people I know that are just about
it
like
was,
that.
It was a very interesting persona, but they have alluded to in the show, and if you watch this, isn't giving away too much, but if you watch the show, they allude to that this guy does have psychological problems, like a delusional disorder or something where she's supposed to be medicating for, which he's not. But he is, however, doing drugs. So there is a sense that some of the things he's experiencing in the course of the show may or may not be real.
So like allusions to like maybe Fight Club or A Beautiful Mind or, you know, stuff along those lines.
I mean, I immediately drew parallels to Fight Club and to The Usual Suspects where, you know, there are. We don't know if the people he's interacting with are at least there's certain we don't know what's real and what's
not. He acts as the narrator. So I guess the setup is, and it comes out right in the first line, is he acts as the narrator. He's talking to an imaginary person that he says that I'm creating you, and it's you is really us. Now we're the audience. That's how we're kind of being drawn into this whole thing. So he's the sole narrator. We're seeing things through his eyes, but it's an unreliable narrator. Possibly. We don't
right.
know yet.
And there are forks in the way that he's narrating the story, because at one point he'll actually start saying or doing something, and then they'll kind of rewind and show that that's really only what happened in his mind, what he wanted to say or what he wanted to do, but what he really did was he didn't answer the question at all.
Yeah, which is completely like a lot of yes. people, and like a lot of us here, I'm sure.
But, you know, for what I know of the USA Network, this is a particularly well-done show. I mean, it's not like, you know, you expect it to be like, when you watch USA, you expect it to be some kind of procedural like...
Airwolf?
SVU, Law and Order, that kind of nonsensical police drama. This one is really well done. I mean, at least the pilot. Now, I made the correlations when I saw it. And I liked it a lot, and I thought, man, this is, to me, this strikes me as being very good. But then, maybe I'm just wrong. But everybody seems to be saying yes, it is good. But the question becomes whether it's sustainable or not. And it actually goes into regular rotation sometime either
later in June.
Later in
June,
like
3 more weeks or something.
Yeah, it'll come out every week, and
Do they have a full season of it, or
yes,
it's just...
They only have the pilot available for watching right. now, and then it's going to start broadcasting in the new season starting in June. And it looks like it could be so good and too sophisticated to succeed.
Although, technically, here's the thing. Like, the made-up computer stuff that, you know, you get the technobabble in most shows, it's wrong. And really, the geeks, the only ones that pay attention, say, like, that's completely wrong. The people at home are hearing stuff that even if they tried to understand, they wouldn't, because it's so made up and so fabricated. That's not really how it works. This show, at least with the DNS stuff and with some of the files and with, you know, like CH modding permissions,
Tor,
real basic Tor, it all was technically pretty proficient. You know, it's in terms
of. And they're
they
not
understand.
Going over the top with how they're portraying his using. There are
it's
some
off the shelf, you know,
some little graphical stuff about, you know, the advancing of the virus towards the main backup server was a little dramatic and made up for Hollywood, but a lot of the command line stuff looks mm-hmm. like it's kind of accurate. It's not real glamorous. It's not real, you know, showy. But it's a good show, and I recommend that, you know, even if you want to understand that weird guy in your IT department, you might want to watch this show. All right, well, there's the music, which tells us that we have to take a little break here for the top of the hour on Technology Bites, so we're going to take a little break at the top of the hour. And we'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Inflicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Hey, Groovehouse.
KPFT is seeking prospective volunteers to help in our music library. Our music library is a massive resource for our DJs and listeners. Volunteers will be assigned a number of different tasks, from refiling CDs to converting music for inclusion into the upgrade of our music library focused on digital. We're also looking for people who can spot up-and-coming bands to feature on our HD3 music stream. Successful volunteers will be team players who work well with others, have the ability to alphabetize, and can manage multiple tasks. Shifts happen weekdays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. This is an unpaid volunteer gig, but it is one of the most fun times ever for anyone into music, music discovery, and turning others on to outstanding music. Interested? Drop an email to music@kpft.org with the subject line Music Volunteer. We'll take it from there. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
Thank you. Texas Folklife's Accordion Kings and Queens Festival will be held at Miller Outdoor Theater, Saturday, June 6th at 7 p.m., featuring accordion stars and legends Deborah Peters and the Love Saints, Jeremy Batiste and the Zydeco Players, and the Grammy-winning Lost Tex-Maniacs with Flaco Jimenez, Augie Myers, and Rick Trevino, plus the up-and-coming stars of tomorrow, the newly crowned 2015 Big Squeeze Champs. It will be a night of celebrating all genres of Texas roots music, including Cajun, Zydeco, and Conjunto. Grab your boots and dancing shoes. Be sure to pick up your free tickets at Miller Theater the day of the event or for advanced reserve seating. To become a member of Texas Folklife, call 512-441-9255 or texasfolklife.org. KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, and now back to Technology Bites without Barrett Time.
No, Barrett Time. Should have heard Barrett Time a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, go back to that podcast.
I need to go listen to that.
So before the hour, top of the hour, y'all were talking about, technology shows that use technology, have technology people in that are like really accurate and really good. So my story begins with I was in the dollar store and looking through the $1 DVDs when I came across this DVD, and I was like, I have to get this. It's a dollar. It's from the producers or somebody involved somehow. Maybe it was a grip or something for CSI. And it's called Cybergeddon.
Cybergeddon!
I mean, and the tagline is, there is no ESC. There is no escape button. I was like, oh my God, this has to be awesome in a horrible way. So, so I bought it. And,
Was it awesome?
I'm not sure. I think I would use the AW out of awesome. No, it was really horrible.
Not in a good way.
I will
it
say
sucked not in a good way.
I will say so some of the it was bad. Like, so a plot synopsis sort of is like this woman who works for the FBI or something as an agent at the very beginning captures this Russian or Ukraine, I guess he's Ukrainian maybe because he was in the Ukraine in a Ukrainian prison. So later on, that's where he went to prison. Anyway, she captures him because he did some hacking by acting like praying that she's his dead daughter or daughter he thought was dead. Anyway, so he gets captured, goes to jail, and then when he gets out of jail, of course, he's going to seek revenge on her. And she's a hacker, but she kind of took advantage of the situation to get a promotion and kind of screwed over this guy that she was friends with in the agency. But she's friends with these other hackers. And so then the other hackers have to get involved to try to help her catch this really awesome hacker that got out of prison early. But it was one of those things where, first of all, the acting was pretty bad, except for the main hacker. The main hacker, he was actually quirky. It's like they watched the movie Hackers and created this character. So he was actually halfway decent. Like, he dressed kind of quirky, had some quirks. They gave him some tics, and he was, his lines were pretty funny. But outside of that, it was really not very good.
Did he have a hacker name? Is he like somewhat cool?
What was his name? What was his name? Rabbit. His name was Rabbit.
That's a dumb hacker name.
One of the other hackers was named Blue, and it was like a Asian chick that had like looked goth and had like blue makeup, you know, eyeliner and stuff all the time. Anyway, it wasn't very good except for that guy. And the thing was that they used a lot of terminology. But it was one of those things where you could tell it was obvious they were shoving. They talked to somebody that knew some stuff, and they just shoved it into the show, you know? So it's like the first thing the guy does when he gets out of prison is he gets his smartphone and he executes something on the smartphone that sets off these viruses that are in a water treatment plant in California that starts shutting them down.
As one does.
5 seconds of getting out of prison.
Totally.
So they're tracking this thing, right? This virus at the FBI headquarters, and they're like, "Oh yeah, this virus is polymorphic, you know, and it's behaving a lot like Stuxnet." So it was like name dropping and terminology that is real, but it's obvious that it's
out of context.
It's not even necessarily that it's inaccurate, but it's that it's obvious that it's name dropping.
Like, oh no, the weather looks bad. We might get snowed in.
Dun-dun-dun.
I mean, they did that a lot, so it was not good. So afterwards, I watched it with my wife. So afterwards, I was like, I can't let this be it. Like, I have to watch a good hacker, you know, tech movie. So I had a limited.
So you pulled up Netflix and watched some NCIS. Watched some NCIS episodes, right?
No, so I actually got my DVD of Hackers and watched it, which I hadn't watched in a number of years.
That's one of the most realistic hacking movies ever made, right?
So I don't know if it's because that movie, the one I watched before, was so horrible, but Hackers was really good. And I mean, because
doesn't it make you miss the 90s?
They did a lot. Okay, there's a lot of goofiness to it, but at the same time, they do a lot of name dropping, but it seems plausible in the context of the film. It's not like the other one where it was like obvious they were name dropping. Because yeah, at one point one of the guy pulls out a backpack and he starts pulling out the books, right? All the mm-hmm. books, and the guy's just zero cool.
They're real
just,
books. Those were the
yeah,
books too.
They were all
they
real
went
books.
Through the hoops to go get those books.
They had the real
the
books.
Movie.
He's yeah. dropping them, and the guy's saying what their hacker names are and why they're called that, right? They talk about the phone company stuff, like the guy, you know, boxes. They talk about how to do that. I can't even, like, Lord Nikon, right, is a black guy that's, I mean, like, there was so much of it that was...
Reference, a lot of
like,
2600 references.
Yeah, there were a lot of
Daniel
legitimate
Goldstein.
References that are real.
Phone
that
freaking.
Are, hacking yeah. the Gibson.
Like, people or events or just cultural touch points that were really too, like, the one guy is Emmanuel Goldstein, like, that's his name. Right, I mean, so like, much in there that is legitimately connected to real hacking culture.
Well, it's
that,
given back too. I mean, a lot of it's become hacking culture. You know,
hack
like
the Gibson.
We just said the hack the Gibson thing is, yeah. you know, like, you know, trash the planet, or like, hey, I put it where I left that thing that one time. You know, all those are, you know, straight up in there.
You know, another movie that did something really accurate where you totally wouldn't have expected it was what's the second?
Swordfish.
Yes, Swordfish. No, get back in the booth. No, I was going to say Matrix
Face
Reloaded.
Off.
The second, no, not Face Off. The second Matrix movie, Matrix Reloaded, at the beginning when they show when Trinity is busting into the the plant or the dam or whatever that was where they were breaking in. She pulls up. You see very briefly an SSH window with running Bash and she fires off nmap, runs a port scan, and then executes an attack against an actual...
It was an actual exploit.
An actual
really
exploit,
existed.
The SSH V1 CRC32 exploit. I'm reading off my screen here. and using a non-existent program called SSH Nuke to fire it off with. But, yeah, like that was quite a neat little bit of cred, and they even got the IP addresses right, and they didn't use, like, 384.721.
Dotted quintuplet.
Yeah, exactly. It was neat to see. That's actually one of the first times I heard about what nmap was.
You learned it from the Matrix?
I learned about nmap from the Matrix, which is some kind of really weird, crazy...
How'd you learn about Tracer T?
Tracer T, I learned about on the playground.
From Next Gen Hacker.
From Next Gen Hacker. Tracer T lets you find out all the different ways that Google is hacking you.
How many people are using a website?
Yeah.
I bet you could find out who from Google Googled you, Jay.
Oh, you could use Tracer T, yeah.
I'm about to launch a full hack.
You know, I've got to say, that video, having watched it several times over the years, it's got to be fake.
No,
it's,
I don't think so.
No,
I don't
it's
know.
No, it's
I don't
so
it
over
it is.
The top.
It's so
it's so bad.
It's so good, but it's hard to tell. Either he knew. That, but I don't think he
you've
got
to be intimately familiar with how it works to fake it, to screw up that.
No, he was just guessing it.
Either somebody, an older brother or sister or somebody that knew it, like coached him to do all that stuff, or he was just guessing. I go back and forth. I think it probably was real, and he was just trying to act like he knew what he was doing, but... Yeah, I don't know.
For folks not familiar with what we're talking about, if you go to YouTube...
Well, first of all, let's start off with what Tracer T is.
Tracer T. If you go to YouTube in the search box, just type Trace RT, T-R-A-C-E-R-T. The very first video that comes up is titled How to View Someone's IP Address and Connection Speed by Next Gen Hacker 101.
Traceroute is like an IP, like an... It's
one of the tools in your network admin toolkit. It lets you see the number of networking hops between you and
something else. It tells you what they are.
You and a destination.
Yeah. Between you and a destination. Gives you timing, and you can use it at a high level. You can use it to identify some very basic problems.
Well, if you can't get to a site and you want to know how far you're getting, you can fire that up and see, okay, what router is it failing, or what kind
Except
of path am I getting
there? Usually at some point there's some stupid... firewall.
Well, back in the day, you had a decent chance of being able to email root at whatever that was and be like, hey, listen, I'm trying to da 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 da, and your system is timing, and like they'd respond. Back in the 90s, back when this was all new, but yeah. So the first video, if you search for Trace RT. Trace route, that's the Windows abbreviation of the command, is this. It's a video by a kid, and he gets it all
wrong.
Who is
from Texas?
He gets it so wrong.
Host a radio show on KPFT.
that's what I'm saying, though. He gets it so wrong with the description that it wraps around and becomes like a performance piece almost.
Well,
it's
if you
beautiful.
Watch it, though, and you think that this is maybe he's fired it up once or twice, he read it somewhere, he's guessing at what he's seeing, he has a base misunderstanding of what's actually going on. It's super, super plausible, almost too, I think it's perfect, where this is why I don't think it was faked. I think it'd be very hard for someone to get the timing down, to get how he was doing it, to get the accent, everything right, and be blatantly wrong about things. But if you're coming at it from his perspective, okay, I can see that makes sense.
It.
And if you also take like another person that knows nothing about it, they would probably be like, okay, I guess I can see that.
Well, because when you're 12, and you know, the best thing is if you can talk enough smack and convince the other 12-year-olds that you know what you're talking about.
There you go. I think he's cut out for management.
I can't believe
give him another 10 years.
I
he's going to be a management
nobody
consultant.
Hasn't like researched to like track him down. I mean, because that video came out. What,
six years ago, according
at this
to the,
point, yeah, it's probably a little bit more legal, but at the time, you don't want to go Googling
so
little boys.
So he's got to be 18, 19, like maybe in college.
He's got, let's see what other videos are up here. There are
the only other videos I ever saw was like, how to use, it wasn't Photoshop, it was like, it wasn't a torrent.
Oh, no, it was wasn't it how to learn Photoshop?
Okay, wait. Wait. So I'm looking at his.
How to not be bad at Photoshop.
This is Next Gen Hacker 101, and today I'll be teaching you guys how to view other computers' IP addresses. And
do we have to pay him royalties now?
View them.
You do.
Just see how they work, and today I'm going to be teaching you how to do that. All right, you guys. A few things first. The cool thing about this IP viewer is
he is looking at IP addresses.
What their connection speed is, and you can see what site they're on. Alright, so it's really cool, and I think you guys might like this. Okay, this is my precise instructions. I will also post this in my description. And remember to also, you guys,
this beautiful Camtasia
videos,
recording here that he's got, right,
to view their IPs, there's no downloads, no installments, and no websites. All you is you open up. Oh, and you must have internet connection to view other
clearly
IPs. You can't do it without
clearly
internet connection.
Oh, man, you can trace your route 127.0.0.1.
Nuh-uh. All right,
so
not through my firewall.
Run CMD, of course. Here we go. And this thing will pop up. And if anyone's familiar with CMD, they'll know this. All right, what you do is you type in
the command prompt window. Tracer T.
Space. All right, this is a cool thing. Tracer T and then space. Now which one it is, you want to type the site you want to view. So you want to go HTTP.
You know, this doesn't work on some things.
This won't work on the Linux version.
And then,
yeah, it doesn't work
on the
Linux.
BSD version.
Yeah. On the website, so like, let's just say Google.
Oh, does he? I haven't watched this in so long.
No, I think it works. So I think there's certain versions of Windows that it'll work on.
Looking at Google right now. And like at this exact moment,
it's not POSIX compliant.
Looking at Google, what their IPs are, and what their connection speed is. Here we go. Once you've done, tracer T, space... And then the website, http://. The website, I'm going to Google. I'm going to go ahead and do that as an example.
Four dots all together. Shouldn't
it be dot, dot, dot?
Yeah.
So many dots.
And here we go. Here they come. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
And this is how we know he's in Texas. Not only because of his accent, but because you can see he's going through Comcast El Paso.
All right, this is their connection speed. This is what it was to then to them.
This is what it was only to then to
them. Oh, this one's awesome, too, because he gets here. This is awesome because right after that, he starts talking about when you get the stars. And he's like, oh, when you get the stars, that means they're blocking you, or it means that their system is better than yours.
That'd be me. I don't let people see my trace routes.
Yeah, no. I've got a Tracer T Buster on my connection. And you can only see it if you've got the Tracer T Buster.
I wear blue blockers when I use my terminal, and that keeps everyone out.
Buster. What movie was that? It was The Big Hit. Is that what that was? Mm.
So I saw a really good computer hacker thing yesterday. Flicted saw a really, really bad one.
I followed on Jay's heels, and I back up his assertion that this.
Oh wait, before
movie.
We
I like it.
Before we leave,
I'm jet-lagged. I'm
before we leave Next
here.
Gen Hacker 101, I was saying before we got started there, I looked at his YouTube channel, and he's got a bunch of other videos, including how to change desktop clock,
yep.
How to use Google as LimeWire.
That's the one that I was thinking.
Which
of.
Is better, Firefox or Explorer? How to get Counter-Strike and Source free, and what torrents are and how to get them?
He's trying.
So a couple years ago, I actually looked up and watched all those videos. I Google searched like next-gen hacker, like all these variations, 101, all this stuff. I found a couple of websites, a couple of forum sites where he had posted, but I couldn't find like anything that was current. Like everything was 4 to 6 years old.
It's like he was only among us for a short time.
It's like he realized
and
he was
vanished into the ether,
distanced himself from everything. Yeah,
went on to become the host of Technology Bites.
No, he's probably some congressman's tech aide right now.
Well, what happened is after using LimeWire and all those torrents, his dad kicked him off his computer. Haven't been working at Taco Cabana long enough to get a new one.
I want somebody to find this guy, though, and just find out what
Thank
the
him.
Deal was. Like, if it was a spoof, or if he, like, where he's at now. Like, if he does anything related to technology, or what he thinks about that from that period, assuming that it was legit. It just seems like it'd be really interesting.
Looks like somebody needs to drive to Vegas for DEF CON and stop off in El Paso.
We should invite him to be our special guest for the 20th anniversary show. He'd be our headliner.
The thing is, I never could find a name. I was looking for like first name or anything I could go on
he's
to try
to
track him
further. He's
too
elite for you to find. Yeah.
Or I'm not lead enough to track
Clearly,
him down.
Clearly, he's it's just stars to you. He's better
His
than
digital
you.
Digital footprint is very minimal.
Have you tried emailing
he
the account?
Out. He flipped that.
I have not tried.
Just in case he's still going to email me, and you never
I
know.
I never tried contacting him. I was just trying to find information online.
He probably firewalls his emails.
I'm
so
more of a stalker
even,
than
you couldn't even get to it.
Than like straightforward, just in trying to talk to somebody.
Probably uses Zone Alarm Pro, so you couldn't even
no,
email him.
He's totally off the grid. He's living in a shed in his parents' backyard with no electricity, no nothing. Because somebody started peeing him, and he
New
got afraid.
New things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
Okay, now that bumper I like. That's good stuff.
I feel like we need an A-team van.
What?
An A-team van.
Yeah.
I think that was People's Court.
That was People's Court.
Oh, okay. Well, still. Okay.
Say, you're mixing jet your lag. 80s shows up.
just blame jet lag.
Jet lag. There you go.
I was thinking of the crossover episode of
Wapner.
People's Court and A-Team.
And A-Team.
I'd watch that. I would watch that.
All right. Well, on the new stuff front, this one, sadly, Amazon is offering free same-day delivery for Prime members. Where before they were doing a $5.99 fee if you did that. Of course, it's only at 14 metropolitan areas. So, of course, wouldn't the number four metro area in the country have it? No. No, Houston does not get that. You know which
Stupid
Texas
Dallas.
City does get it? Dallas.
Burn, Dallas, burn.
Yeah, burn it to the ground. But hopefully in the future, other Texas cities that are more deserving than Dallas will receive such a thing.
You know, the thing is, Dallas, like, there's a whole lot of giant network hub stuff for the internet that goes through Dallas. Yeah. So they maybe that's tainted Amazon's perception.
Well, plus from
Dallas will pay above retail for everything.
from a standpoint of metro area, actually, I mean, you mentioned Houston is a larger city than Dallas, but the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area is larger than the Houston metro area. If you get that whole expanded thing in there, they are actually bigger if you add in all of their suburbs and annexed areas and incorporated.
Number of people and or square miles.
I don't know. Wikipedia.
That's probably the other piece is that Houston is a lot more scattered.
Wikipedia.
You know, another interesting thing that comes with it, though, is, you know, Amazon doesn't say how many people are signed up with Amazon Prime, but the estimate is somewhere between 30 and 40 million people in the U.S., with another 40 to 50 million worldwide. Some researchers even predict that half of the U.S. population could be signed up for Amazon Prime by 2020. If they did same day, I could see that if they did same day, I think there's a lot of people who that would be worth for $100 a year to get same day delivery if you order before noon on a million items.
Oh, yeah.
That could be fairly compelling.
I'd do it.
Do you have to buy a full million or can you just buy like a couple?
Like three or four.
Jet lag.
Well, apparently they sell like 40 million different items, there are 20 million items are covered by the free 2-day delivery, and then 1 million of those are same day.
That's probably nothing I want. Ugh, stupid Amazon.
Oh, yeah, 999,997 items. I can't find something I want. Oh, wait. This next one might be it. You know, next.
Nope.
Did one of us buy the domain for nextgenhacker101.com and forget about it? Because it's out there. It doesn't pull up anything web content that I can see so far. I'm seeing if there's anything else out there, but I probably shouldn't have pulled it up directly in my browser. We're seeing what was there, because I bet it's someone that gets the joke and is lazy.
Because maybe he is lead.
Yeah.
Wait, look up the who
BIOS
is
on your Mac.
I'm trying to trace RTM, but it's taken a while.
Look up the who is data on it.
It's blocked.
Oh, this domains by proxy.
Well, have you tried using Tracer T?
Well, I'm working on it.
What was that?
It's going to show you how many people are on the site, though. That's all it's going to tell you.
It's a lot of people on this site.
If you only want to find the IP for the site, you could use nslookup.
Oh, I prefer PNG.
Yeah, PNG is pretty good.
Okay, another.
I was
going
to try to mispronounce
product.
That's next gen Pi. PING.
So, Computex, the annual, which is no longer, I guess, in the United States, now is an annual technology show held in Taipei, Taiwan. So they've outsourced even that. Engineers from Acer showed off a small sensor module that sits inside any regular diaper and can detect moisture and methane.
Nice.
The module links to an app called Diaper Pie. I think PewDiePie should get his lawyers on this one. And will send you an alert if your baby has produced any pee, any moisture, or methane. It can also detect a baby's temperature and sleeping posture.
Isn't that generally pretty easy to detect, though? I mean, you know, I don't have any babies, but I've heard that, you know, the situation kind of makes itself obvious relatively quickly.
But using technology so that you don't even have to touch your child to know what's going on,
you have to touch them to change.
Maybe that's the future.
No, they just get robots.
Actually, the future is that, you know, they say this is for babies, but there's nothing keeping it from being Depends 2.0.
I'm just going to put it in my own pants so my phone can alert me when I've peed myself. Because you just never know.
There's going to be a large market for that in Japan in the next 5 to 10 years.
So that they'll know, you'll know, Gret, that it's time to go check on great grandma or whatever.
And I'm thinking the whole, like, you know, whole B&D subculture might you know, the whole infantile thing, they might be able to use that too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, what, ABBL or
Dave and Buster's culture? What?
B&B. It's like adult babies, adult baby diaper lovers. I think is what it is. You don't watch Discovery Channel or that has all the bizarro like fetish shows now, like the Duggars and the they're a different kind of show. Now there's all the weird like subculture, you know, where they do the whole furries and all that kind of stuff, and you
there's,
know,
shows. There's shows.
See, this
on
way
now on Discovery.
I don't know if it's Discovery. Any of those learning ones that have stopped having anything actually
like TLC that has nothing to do with learning.
Well, I know that some of those channels ran out of content after the Mayan apocalypse
didn't happen. Is it Shark Week again?
I guess the History Channel.
Every week can be Shark Week.
So NextGen Hacker 101 is registered through a private registration service that actually looks fairly legit. So whoever registered it didn't want to be known.
They don't want to let it out that they're not really him, or he really doesn't want to be found.
Right.
You've been thwarted again.
It's time to call a cyber detective. you need to look him up on the dark net.
Regarding try, buy, or fry on that item, I guess I would have to have a baby first, and that's not happening.
No, I'm good.
I think my thought is that if we weren't interested in trying it, someday we will.
We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, though. Like, we're going to get old and just not care about technology anymore.
Service robots.
Confused
I
by
may
it.
Need something like that that will let alert people to buy diapers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, well, so they'll combine it with that Amazon button thing. So then you'll sit in your
Change
old
me!
Person cubicle.
Same day pants.
In your old person cubicle, and when the methane alarm dings.
Especially equipped quadcopters come and pull your pants off.
Maybe you could just do new pants by a drone.
Maybe you could just get up to an Arduino that creates like a shock that makes you get up and run and have it tied to a rope. So when you take off running, it pulls the diaper out.
This is like some Rube Goldbergian pants-changing
like
technology.
Hill.
And then when you run through the door, it sets off sensors that spray water.
What you're going to need is some kind of nanotechnology that makes self-cleaning pants form around you automatically.
So it just slips off.
It's just robots. It's just all
I think they're
going to
go for the. I think it's
all
likely
just
we'll have
robots all the way down.
Robots all the way down.
I think it's more likely we'll have the Idiocracy approach, where they'll just build the toilet into your Easy Boy recliner that you sit in and watch.
I bet you could find that.
Not far away.
I have a feeling that actually probably exists.
Well, so after those kind of, you know, either pedestrian, you know, same day delivery that we don't get, or odd like the diaper thing. Now we need something badass.
Yeah,
and
don't Google toilet recliner. You will. It does exist.
The Ripsaw EV2 luxury tank.
Yes, please.
And no, this is not only available to the military. It was designed for the military and is available to the public.
So it's like the Hummer.
Designed to handle any terrain or obstacle in style, arriving in all black. There's a plus.
Oh, I want
this
one.
High-speed vehicle is based on the fastest dual-track vehicle ever deployed, the unmanned Ripsaw MS-1. In addition to its obvious off-road prowess, it also has a diesel engine putting out over 600 horsepower and an upscale interior, which one have in your tank. This is a supervillain tank with features like leather seating and a touchscreen entertainment system.
I noticed the price on this says TBA, meaning to be announced, so I'd imagine it's going to be relatively high.
Yeah, I think it probably should be if you have to ask.
Just looking at the console of the darn thing.
Think as much as a Tesla?
They're saying on the manufacturer's site, they're saying vehicles take up to 6 months to fabricate and can cost one to hundreds of thousands depending on desired luxury and performance packages.
I can just see the old school mechanic in his coveralls and greasy hat and you're going to have to take that somewhere else.
We don't serve your kind here.
But does the chick in the black leather bikini deliver your Ripsaw? I wonder if that's part of their thing.
Sure.
I would be careful how you talk. She owns a tank.
Yeah, you don't mess with her, but anyway, so that one, iconic extreme luxury is their slogan for the ripsaw, and that one I think would definitely be that. The problem is, I guess, do we need another category, which is we'll never have enough cash?
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think I can buy.
Jeez, yeah, try buy or do time.
Try buy or you wish.
Oh, so 0 to 65 in 3 seconds.
That's pretty darn fast, sir.
That is pretty
Yeah,
quick.
We'll see. And you buy it, and then since it runs on diesel, then you can like put that you only use biodiesel or eco diesel on for the bumper sticker on the back, you know, on your $1 million aggressive tank. But, you know, I'm kind to the environment with biodiesel.
I'm kind to the environment by not having kids, as we mentioned earlier.
No, yep. Methane detection at your home. And I guess the final one is more, I didn't know where to file this. Should it be news? It's not really something to try, but Hewlett-Packard, they have a prototype of the Hewlett-Packard Futuristic Machine Computer, capital M Machine. I don't know if this is the machine that Rage Against the Machine was raging against, but essentially they're putting out a prototype next year for people to develop software on, although the actual finished product is still about 5 years away. It's a single rack prototype that has 2,500 CPU cores and an impressive 320 terabytes of main memory. That's according to CTO and HP Labs director Martin Fink. There's a great – is it Frank? No, lab director Martin Fink told reporters at the HP Discord conference today. It's more than 20 times the amount of any server on the market today. The deal is that where you may have heard of this before is this is tied to the Memristor technology. But the prototype, because they're not done doing the memristors, is going to use current DRAM memory chips, because you know they haven't finished developing the other stuff, and that's one of the big reasons why this is a few years away. But they think that this could replace a system the size of a refrigerator would be able to do the work of an entire data center, according to them. You know, rivals have scoffed, obviously. But what they're going to do is they're using regular DRAM chips, and so the machine has to, in place of the memristors, and to make that work, they're going to they have to keep it powered all the time, because memristors, the big thing is you can write to them, and then they maintain their they maintain their state and their memory without necessarily having power. So their substitute is to power it for now, which means, of course, it doesn't get any of the efficiency and speed benefits that you had before. But it also basically doesn't have hard disk drives. It's HP's goal is to do away with disk drives altogether and replace the DRAM with non-volatile memory. So, next year's won't be very, very energy efficient. But the later version of the machine should use phase change memory, which is another type of non-volatile memory that's still under development, and then memristors. So they're really looking ahead to the next two generations of memory technology. And it says that it will have memory pools linked by high-speed silicon photonics that will carry data at 1.2 terabytes per second. So that means you need a boatload of Thunderbolt 3 cables to make that sucker work.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the architecture reads like a traditional supercomputer, where the focus is on not necessarily the computation part, but the I.O. part, the ability to shuffle tremendous amounts of data back and forth between the components. And that's what really set aside the original craze, was that not necessarily just the raw computing power, but the bus bandwidth.
Yeah, you've got to get the data back and forth. They can all work on the same problem, and that's been the bottleneck. So this is kind of cool. It's a cool movement, and the density is just insane.
I could have told you 2 or 3 years ago exactly how a memristor worked. I had to do a lot of research on – on solid-state memory technology, and at the time, HP had just published a bunch of papers. I remember that it has something to do with storing, sort of like a play on how solid-state disks work, except with solid-state disks, they use charge, and a memristor uses resistivity of components to store zeros and ones, and the difficulty isn't necessarily in doing it, it's doing it fast enough. That was the holdup a few years ago, and HP said they were working on it. So this has been kind of a thing for a while, the memristor tech, and it's getting faster and faster.
And yeah, this one doesn't seem like, you know, this doesn't seem like FUD. This doesn't seem like HP throwing out stuff to try and appear relevant. This looks, the stuff they're doing, it's all legit. And they're betting heavily on the future. There's another article about it that they think that this won't just be for servers. That's the initial target. But HP is also working on an Android version that it says could lead to smartphones with 100 terabytes of storage.
That's almost enough for all of Jay's MP3s.
All his pictures. His
pictures, yeah. Yeah. From his last trip.
Yeah, they want to replace all the different storage technologies with a single, quote, universal memory, unquote, pool made from memristors. So basically the line between your between all, you know, disk drives, system memory, SSDs, whatever, would go away.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, it's only segregated out now. You only have different tiers of storage in a computer now because of the different amount of latency in between the tiers, and extremely low latency is extremely expensive. And there's kind of a hierarchy. As you walk out from CPU registers, which would be the absolute lowest latency form of storage, all the way out to hard disk drive, which is the highest latency form of local storage. And I don't see it'd be, I mean, you'd have the CPU registers, then you'd have the on-die cache, and then back in the old days, you'd have the cache on a stick, external cache module, and then you've got RAM, and then you've got hard drive space with SSDs sort of in the same area as hard drive space.
And
but
DVD or CD read write
jukeboxes. Right, yeah, and then you get into yes, and then tape, writing it on paper and printing it out,
punching it on cards.
But the trade off as you walk up that pyramid, each successive step is larger. You know, your hard drive you have more hard drive space than you do RAM these days. But there's a trade-off. It's cheaper and it's also higher latency. And it's really the latency, not even necessarily the access speed, but the latency that's the big differentiator as you go down the steps. So if you can fill an entire computer up with terabytes of low latency storage, the need to have separate RAM and hard drive space or SSD space kind of goes away. You end up with kind of a unified storage architecture for everything. For the you don't even necessarily need a cache layer at that point. I guess you'd still have an on-die cache, but you wouldn't necessarily need like a RAM cache because your RAM and your storage is the same layer. So
plus you cut out a lot of the bottlenecks. You know, each step. Yeah. Has a pipe between, you know, that your hard drive can usually more than saturate the connection between it and, you know, what, your memory or the CPU or, you know, and so on. And that's why they're getting into the photonics. Apparently, in this other article, it says that the photonic cables, which sounds like, you know, some kind of 1950s, will Flash Gordon be able to disconnect the photonic cables? But six terabyte per second photonic cables.
That means light. That means basically fiber optic-y kind of things. Photons.
Yeah, and that's the internal, but that's still, you know, if you can carry that much data around, think about the size network it's going to take and the kind of speed network it's going to take to support. You know, because the first guy that gets home with his 100, you know, imagine when a million people get home with their 100 terabyte Android smartphones and plug them in and start loading them up.
Well, and also with if you start using light, you also can start calculating outside of base 2, right? Because you can use wavelengths, different wavelengths to do whatever base number you want.
Do dense wave division multiplexing.
For data transfers, but I'm talking about like actually like computation. So you're doing like base 10 hex, base 16, whatever.
I think that's an architecture thing. Well, your CPU is still is, well, I don't know. This is way above my head.
That's how the memristors work.
Start,
is instead of using electrons,
making things up
moving
and
ions.
Yeah.
So instead of just using 0 or 1, you're actually getting, you know, different variables up, so you can use quite a bit more bandwidth in the same amount of space.
There you go. There you go, man.
There you go.
That needs to come out.
I think that fits under a definite try, you know, at least for home. You
try
know,
in so 10 you... years when they finally get it.
Yeah. Yeah, late. That's, I mean, memristor tech is one of those things in that perpetual 3 to 5 years away bucket. There's a lot of tech in that bucket, and it's been in there for quite some time.
I noticed, although they don't rival quantum computing yet, as far as the being the computing of the future.
3 to 5 years away.
always.
And then
right after, you'll get it right after you get your flying car.
Flying car with a quantum computer.
3 to 5 years out.
3 to 5 years.
With some serious tread on it.
So, well, hopefully there'll be more like, on Try By or Fry, hopefully there'll be more stuff that's a lot closer to, you know, I know it's a bit more abstract this week, but we'll get to where there's more stuff that people actually might be considering buying.
So
I did see in the airport on the way back, was there some overturning or re-signing into law some Patriot Act stuff?
They didn't renew some aspects, and then they passed the Freedom Act or something, which was supposedly supposed to limit the NSA's ability to collect metadata. But at least one organization, I think several organizations, went through the Freedom Act's fine print and kind of realized, well, it's not really saying that the metadata won't be collected. It's saying that instead of the NSA collecting it, the telcos or whoever will collect it, and then the NSA will provide a warrant to go get that information.
They're just shifting around.
So they're basically putting a middleman between, instead of the NSA getting it, they can go to some. It's kind of like going back to, like, you know, the carnivore thing where, you know, AT&T sticking it in the network, but the NSA can get the data.
The NSA isn't actively doing anymore, but they still have access to everything they had.
That's what
it.
That's what it sounds like. So
that's no good.
It's kind of an end around approach to, like, oh no, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I saw Rand Paul going off about something, but that's all I could kind of glean from.
Well, he filibustered, I guess, towards the end of that to help make sure that it didn't.
Yeah, he made it. He was a participant in making sure that the Patriot Act, those provisions expired. But of course, now, you know, this few days later, then the Freedom Act is there, also known as the French Fry Act. I think some people refer to it. Anyway,
the French Act.
He laughed Frenchily.
I farted in your general direction.
That's, you know, they've already got this Band-Aid on it, the whole USA Freedom Act.
So another interesting one is that Assange came out in the last day or two to talk about of his Ecuadorian embassy prison in England to talk about, you know, there's the whole thing going on now with the Trans-Pacific Pact.
Oh, the TPP.
Yeah, so there's like 29 sections or whatever, and WikiLeaks has managed to get, I think, 4 of them, although they're kind of out of date at this point. And so Assange put out a thing to try to get people who are fans of WikiLeaks or supporters or whatever to try to raise $100,000 to give that to somebody who is willing to leak the entire TPP. And but the thing is, he's not, so, you know, his thing was that we're not doing it as a buy off or like that. He was like, oh, it's more like the Nobel Prize, where somebody does something incredibly good for the world, and, you know, you give them a gift to show that you appreciate them for doing that. And the question was,
that's how they want to spend it.
Well, because I guess the U.S. had said that the U.S. is going, I guess, the government is trying to angle things towards where it's illegal for journalists to ask for specific information, because then they become corroborators.
I'm not saying this is a bribe. I'm just going to leave this big stack of money here on the table and look,
but
we have a direction.
But beyond that, they're saying, like, that it's that if journalists are
spying news stories,
asking for things, then they're becoming part of their legally, which is that's kind of a weird angle, because I mean that's kind of what journalists do, right? I mean,
used to.
It's not necessarily just that, like, you know, journalists sit around and things fall into their lap and they're like, oh, look, I'll write about this because somebody just gave this to me, right? I mean, they're out looking for things, digging things, talking to people, trying to get people to give them information. So,
yeah, turning that into them being part of a conspiracy to violate the law by asking a question about something that's the other thing I think on the WikiLeaks thing that's smart is, if someone was considering being a whistleblower on it, a lot of them might be held back by the fact of that, you know, hey, once you do that, you may get sued, you may need legal representation, you may lose your job, those kinds of things, where if that money is there, you know, if there's sort of a reward or bounty or thank you or whatever they want to call it, then there's a bigger chance that somebody who maybe had their hands, gets their hands on it, would feel like they could safely hand it over and not be as vulnerable. Because right now there's a lot of advantage taken. If you don't fall under traditional whistleblower protections, then you're screwed.
Although, yeah, I'm thinking if you're going up against the U.S. and the other countries that are involved in the TPP, which is like control 40% of the world's economy, for $100,000, you're probably going to end up with Snowden in Russia or something.
That's true. That's true.
Maybe.
Well, at least you can, like, share secrets. Hey, I got paragraph 7 of the TPP. What have you got?
So I want to do, since we have a couple of science topics on the list here, Jay, why don't you hit us with this? It's a little faint.
Yeah, let's try that again.
Doc's stuck in 1988.
Turn that up, Doc.
Just say science.
There we go. Hit it again. Right. Wait, here we go.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious...
I know you had topics, Peter, but I want to co-opt it for a second.
Co-opt.
Because this is kind of an important day. This today is, if you're on the podcast, it's not today, it's in the future. But today for us here doing this live, it's June 3rd, and that means this is the 50th anniversary of astronaut Ed White's spacewalk on Gemini 4, which was the first
Gemini,
if you're in the space industry, you say it is Gemini. Trust me, this is
well,
how we
cricket.
Roll.
He lives close to NASA. He knows.
I live down there, so
high
I
and
know.
Dry in League City.
Yes, the rain machine.
So yes, in June,
and then that's like you know, the Mercury,
Mercury, and Apollo.
Do they fly around the moon?
Mercury and Apollo flying around the moon.
That's no bun.
Look, that's how you say it. So,
that's
how you say it. In June,
I have the animated gift to prove it.
The space shootle.
No, it's the Spock-A shootle.
Spock-A
shootle.
Sputnik.
The Sputnik.
It's the Shootel.
In June of 1965.
That's
astronaut Ed White made the first.
Ed Whitty.
Ed Whitty. E.D. Whitty. Made the first
Buckaroos.
You know what? I'm just gonna get my
Should have conceded.
Just conceded. No, because I'm right.
How's that working out for you?
You know that most of the astronauts were drunk right around that time, right?
Shoot down their vodka martinis and fly to space. Okay.
So it's the 50th anniversary of the first
50th moon anniversary
walk.
Of the first
Michael Jackson.
Yes, the Michael Jackson walked on the moon. Oh man, right. I was going to be all serious about this too.
All right, rewind.
Okay, 50th anniversary of the first American to walk in space. That's to do what's called an EVA, extravehicular activity. That's where you pop open the hatch of the spacecraft and go outside. Ed White flew on, the mission was Gemini 4, The other important thing about this is that it was actually the first NASA manned space mission to be controlled from here in Houston. At the time, it wasn't the Johnson Space Center. It was the Manned Space Flight Center down in Clear Lake. So this was the first mission to be run here, using the facilities that are here that are still in use to this day that I'm sure many listeners of the program actually work at. So Ed White put on his nice little spacesuit, exited the capsule, and was outside for 20 minutes, and his crewmate on the flight was Jim McDivitt. So this is notable for a couple of reasons. One, it's a big deal, obviously, for extravehicular activity, because this was an important step. Everything in the American space program from Mercury on up to Apollo was sort of a planned series of steps accomplishing a set of goals that added up to landing on the moon. Each mission sort of had an objective and everything kind of built on everything else. Several months before Ed White did his spacewalk, though, and one of the reasons why it was such a big deal was that a Russian cosmonaut, Alexei Arkhipovich Leonov, whose name you might be familiar with because of the Peter Hyams movie, 2010, where the spacecraft was named the Leonov, was the first person to do a spacewalk. Leonov's mission, Voskhod 2, was launched in, let's see, when did he do this? This was March of 1965. So the Russian spacewalk was actually one of the last times the Soviet space program eclipsed the U.S. So Ed White stayed outside the vehicle for about 20 minutes, was out there longer than
Leonov.
Till
the methane detectors went off again?
Yes, till the methane detectors went off. No, and had a very successful mission. Now, the other thing, I know we've been joking, but kind of the tragic thing here is that Ed White's name, if he sounds familiar to you, it's because Ed White was one of the three Apollo 1 astronauts who was killed in the fire in 1967. So 2 years after this mission, where he was the first guy to walk in space, his life was unfortunately cut short with the Apollo 1 fire. Which, again, was, this was all part of, like, the rushed pace that NASA was going through in the 60s to land people on the moon. The Apollo 1 accident, it was sort of a result of trying to do a lot of stuff very, very, very quickly.
You still had a better safety record than the Russians did.
I'm actually researching a piece on the Soviet space program right now. It's going to be a very nice thing when I get done with it. But the Soviets had a very, very different space program from the U.S. In fact, it's kind of ironic because the United States space program was run in a very centrally planned fashion, almost in a Soviet-style fashion. And the Soviet space program was a lot of competing internal bureaus with very, very little central leadership. And it centered around the two main figures in the Soviet space program are Sergei Korolev, their chief designer, and another fellow named Valentin Glushko, who was the other chief designer. And both of them kind of were at loggerheads over a lot of central questions about how the Soviet space program worked. And the Soviet space program evolved a very heavy dependence on automation and mechanics, because their missions were typically done with very, very little advanced planning. The Politburo would call up Korolev, and they would say, you know, we need a mission in 60 days to commemorate the anniversary of the October Revolution. So grab whichever cosmonaut is up in the next rotation and put a mission on real quick. And rather than doing very long cycle training like the Americans did, like NASA was doing, the Soviets were kind of doing a lot of general training. And their vehicles, the Voskhod spacecraft, really were extremely unsophisticated and worked fine, but had lots of malfunctions. And it's not really that they had... I mean, the common misconception is that the Soviets didn't care about safety, and that's, of course, not true. They cared very, very much about safety. It's just that they didn't have the benefit of a tremendous amount of central planning and central support in laying on the missions. So things tended to be a little more rushed and to fall a little more heavily on automation, and that played out with how the Soyuz operates, how the Buran, the Soviet space shuttle copy operated with heavy automation, and a lot of other things that, like how the program developed. Ultimately, the tragedy of the Soviet space program was that the two chief designers fought so much over core questions like what kind of propellants would be in the rockets that while they were busy fighting, they weren't able to put missions on, and the U.S. eclipsed them. And if you want to read more about that, in about 6 months, I'll have this piece written, and it'll be a really nice one. Anyway, so to wrap this all back around, today, June 3rd, is the anniversary of Ed White's first spacewalk, which was the first American spacewalk. And now, I'll close this out with another interesting factoid. The International Space Station, which is in orbit above us right now at this very moment with a number of astronauts on board, including Italian what's her name? Cristoforetti. I forget her first name. Italian astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti, who has a very active Twitter account and is a hilarious person. More EVAs have been done in the construction of the International Space Station than were done for any manned space program added together prior to the ISS. So everything that NASA did, everything that the Soviets did before about 2000, I don't think has even been half as many EVAs as have happened since the International Space Station started construction. There's been a tremendous amount of walking around in spacesuits to build the thing as it is today, and it's quite an impressive achievement. Although, for $160 billion running cost, you'd expect it to be pretty impressive.
Kevin Bacon pronounced it Jiminy in the movie Apollo 13.
I know, because that's the correct.
Also been his poor
That's the industry pronunciation. If you're talking about,
is it tongue in cheek, like how Austinites say Guadalupe?
I've actually been Google searching it while y'all were talking.
Did you? Does it have the pronunciation on the Google?
Well, that's somebody was actually specifically asking, like, how did NASA say it? Although
NASA
there's
says
no
Jiminy.
Official pronunciation, but evidently the astronauts like Jim Lovell and Ed White did say Jiminy.
If you play the tapes, which are available, you can pull all the mission tapes. All of that is public domain.
But I don't know if it was an official NASA
is it just
pronunciation.
They didn't know any better because they read it. You say potato, I say potato.
We're also talking about like you know, maybe it's because if they were like Southern. The drawl of Southern made it.
Jiminy could be Jiminy. It's Jiminy. It's how you say it.
But a lot of people said that before the space program, they had never ever heard that in their life. People from Texas are saying they've never heard that in their life. But other people are saying, well, if you go back and you watch some of the documentaries, like some of the astronauts say Jiminy.
They do, and if you listen to the mission tapes, that's how they say it. Now, I know I'm with you. Before, like, coming to work in the industry and hearing that, I had never heard the pronunciation like that in my entire life. So it was a little weird, but that's, I mean, again,
gotta
that's
find out why. Would it
be fair to say that an astronaut who worked in the program that was born between May 21 and June 20th might have said, I'm a Gemini, and I work on the Jiminy?
Possibly. It could be.
And then Jim and I are going to go have lunch later.
Winner, that was chicken dinner.
The funny thing is that actually was something where they said that Ed White was giving a speech and he was talking about, I guess, maybe Jim Lovell. And he said, Jim and I, and everybody started laughing because of the pronunciation.
Geek gathering this Friday.
Cones. Possibly some motorsports. So
2808 Milam at Drew.
Go to geekradio.com for details. Thank you for tuning in to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's Roofhouse. See you later.
Mark your calendar for Saturday, June 6th, when Ray Wiley Hubbard and Uncle Lucius take the stage at the Creighton Theater in downtown Conroe for the final show in this year's Sounds of Texas music series. When it comes to down and dirty rock and roll, nobody in the wide world of Americana music today does it better than renowned singer-songwriter Ray Wiley Hubbard. He's traveled across the country and internationally, and his journey has earned him widespread critical acclaim and an appearance on The Late Show with David Letterman. The evening will also feature Uncle Lucius, the eclectic indie band from South Austin that fuses old country, classic rock, blues, and jazz for a New Orleans-like gumbo. Their show at the Crichton Theater will feature songs from their latest CD, The Light. Don't miss Ray Wiley Hubbard and Uncle Lucius at the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe on Saturday, June 6th. For tickets, call 936-441-7469, extension 201. Visit soundsoftexasmusicseries.com for more details. Presented by the Friends of Conroe, a Montgomery County nonprofit organization, and KPFT Houston.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.